I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. With 61 people indicted last week on weapons and drug charges, Kansas City is making a statement. This hour, we'll talk with Kansas City, Missouri Police Chief Daryl Forte about the undercover operation. We'll ask the chief about plans to reduce violent crime and better involve city residents in the department's work. And with warmer weather now at our front doorstep, we'll talk about how the chief is getting involved in reducing the number of murders in Kansas City and how the Kansas City No Violence Alliance is helping. Kansas City, Missouri Police Chief Daryl Forte on Up to Date following this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Authorities are wrapping up one of the largest violent crime sweeps in Western Missouri history. The target was individuals and groups most likely to commit violent crimes. Kansas City, Missouri Police Chief Daryl Forte is back with us this morning to give us an update. We'll also ask the chief, who's now been on the job for more than 18 months, whether he still believes the police department is an arrogant organization, as he once called it, and how well police are doing when it comes to stamping out violent crime. But the big question today could be his views on a pressing issue that doesn't seem to be going away. Does he support local control of his police department? Chief, welcome back. So good to have you here. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Well, let's begin with the Kansas City No Violence Alliance, known as KCNOVA, that is designed to reduce shootings and killings in the city. Your department is working with federal authorities last week in the rounding up of dozens of criminal suspects. This was described as one of the largest violent crime sweeps in Western Missouri history. What was the purpose and how effective was it, Chief?
It was very effective, but let me first start off by saying we have a lot of people involved in this. City Council, along with the mayor, gave us the money to kick it off. We have now Tammy Dickinson, the U.S. attorney.
That's right.
On board. We have the head guy for ATF, Marino, involved in this. And we have Gene Peters-Baker. And Gene Peters-Baker and I, even before I was appointed chief, we sat down and talked about what we need to do if I became chief.
She's the Jackson County prosecutor, right?
Absolutely. A great one. A great one.
So why was it so effective last week?
It was so effective because the initiative that was started, ATF and others that I named, early on when they worked on the gun violence piece, you have to get guns off the street, and that was one component of what we're trying to do, what we're continuing to try to do. And we did some things where we made 61 arrests last Friday. We actually went and knocked on doors of some people that we want to come to the next call out to let them know no more. And we hadn't done that before, and that whole team went out there and did that.
And the call-out is where you have a community meeting, and you actually invite certain individuals to come, individuals who might be involved in some sketchy stuff, to come and hear you all talk to them and say, you're watching them. You're aware of who they are and what they're doing.
Absolutely. And we tell them that in a nice, professional, courteous way. And several people talked to us after the meetings and said they thought it would be threatening. We're very polite, courteous, respectful. And we called these groups in. We had three sessions on April 17th, probably about 40 people showed up, some willingly, some, you know, were forced to. But they showed up all together, and it was very, very beneficial for us because a lot of them hung around after the sessions were over and talked to us. Several went to the back of the room where we had the resource center, basically, in that area that day and signed up for some resources. And to date, I know there's six people that asked for help, whether it be GED, housing, food, clothing, or whatever. They stayed around and they asked for help, and they weren't shy about it. And I was in uniform, and what was really telling to me, they had a line of people waiting to come talk to me after the session was over. So it's been a success already, and it's not just because they stayed around and talked to me, but just the fact that they showed up there. And the sad part about it, we've had at least one person that was actually at the call-in that was dozing off at the call-in that was arrested for robbery after that.
No kidding.
Absolutely.
Well, folks who talk to you after these meetings who say, I need a high school degree, Chief, I need food, I need some clothing, how do you help them?
We have a master's social worker that Casey Nova hired, and she's full-time staff. And she put those resources together, and again, they were in the back of the room. We're in another room, not even the back of this room. They had to go through a door, and those people went through those doors saying, I want help. Because our message was no more violence in Kansas City, no more, will not be tolerated. We had the heads of these organizations that I just named saying, each one of us got them talked about in a respectful way, no more. We know who you are. We know what you're doing. We know who your friends are. So if you continue this path, we're coming after you. Next time, it won't be a call-in. It'll be we coming out there putting handcuffs on you. And we made the message clear. We're saying no more. And if you need some resources, and this is what's different in Kansas City now than it's been before, and I think around the country, we're not only talking about no more violence, but we're saying it's another way out. We're not just – our desire is not to put fill the jails up. Our desire is that let's get you some help. You might have some problems, but we're giving you an opportunity to take this right path versus going on the wrong path. And again, people are taking advantage of that.
So Casey Nova is what, a permanent kind of organization, and it's a set of services aimed at folks, and with the objective being no more crime, no more violent crime in Kansas City.
Absolutely, with no more excuses. You know, when you talk to some of these people, like one of the guys we went to go visit after we had a press conference last Friday at the U.S. Attorney's Office, we went, and this guy's taking his GED exam next week. Very positive guy. And when you talk to some of these guys one-on-one and women, they're very positive. But when they get in this group setting and they get with these networks, their personalities kind of change because they're trying to fit in what's happening in the community. So, and we recognize that. Mm-hmm. We can't just say, stop. And not offer anything. We're saying stop and take this path. We're giving you something else over here that you can get out of this. You can get out of this. And we're not just saying stop and not provide for your family. We're saying stop and we'll give you some training.
I was struck by the fact that you said that you went out and asked that certain individuals, certain suspect individuals show up and attend these meetings. I'm wondering how many came voluntarily and how many you had to sort of use a little force to say, you are going to this meeting tomorrow night.
And I would say they all came voluntarily because no probation and parole officer picked them up. No police officer picked them up. They got there by their own accord. So and some might have, you know, said we're going to revoke your probation if you don't come or whatever. But and some didn't show up. Some mm-hmm. didn't show up. And again, I know for a fact at least one guy that showed up and the one that was dozing off while we were talking, he was arrested for robbery several days later.
Hmm. So these folks that you're bringing to these meetings, who are they? I guess they haven't been arrested for a specific crime, but you have a pretty strong foundation to believe they're involved in doing some bad stuff in town.
Yes, some have been arrested. Not all. Some have been arrested, but they've been identified as leaders of those in the community that commit violent acts. So sometimes we didn't tap the actual leader that only had, for lack of a better term, that went two layers out. We tapped some of the leaders that had influence over 50 people. So we knew, and we have networks of over 500 people identified. So we started getting the ones with the most influence. They may not be the most violent, but they had the most connections to some of the most violent. And our message was clear. If you do something, we're going to target you and your associates. And if your associates who, you know, the tentacles reach out to, we're going to target them and we're going to target you. So send this message out to your friends, the ones that didn't show up, the ones that weren't invited or hadn't heard about us. You get the message. You be a messenger for us because we're coming after you and we're coming after you strong and we're not going to apologize for what we do.
You know, as you know, my time with the police department goes back to the mid-1980s and when Larry Joyner was chief of police. And I've covered other initiatives over the years. I remember one in the late 80s that went after career criminals. And the idea was to target folks who commit crime after crime after crime, get them off the street, and you'll see a sharp reduction in crime in Kansas City. My point is we've seen several of these initiatives over the years. Some have had success. I suspect some have not. Why is this one, Casey Nova, why is this one different, Chief?
That second piece where we're not saying just stop. We're saying stop and take this path, and we're giving you that path. Well, you know, we've always gone out there, my entire career since 1985, we've always gone out there and said, we're going to put you in jail if you don't stop. We're good at putting people in jail, but guess what? They're good at getting out. So let's give them the resources to do better. And and that's what's different about this. And you have all these agencies working together. You know, we haven't had this before this long, and we're dedicated to this. You're talking about elected officials. You're talking about ATF. You're talking about, you know, U.S. Attorney. You're talking about Jackson County Prosecutor. Probation and parole knocked on doors with us. Probation officers were out there with us. I mean, because they had the connections, and they knew who needed to be talked to. So that's what's different about it. We're not just saying we're going to put you in jail. That's not what this is about. We're saying stop and take this this path, the right path.
And we're going to help you take the right path in the meantime.
Absolutely. We'll hold you by the hand. We're saying stop, you know, and whatever you need help in. Even if we don't have the resource set up, we'll do it. I heard Gene Peters Baker talking to a guy the other day that we went out there on that Friday. And he was talking about some school that he was going to. And she said, well, you might want to think about this one because it has a little more credibility and there may be some funding. When have you ever heard a prosecutor out there on the corner talking to a guy, or at his house, not on the corner, out mm-hmm. there talking to a guy saying, hey, you know, we can help you. We can help you, even with funding.
So do you think KC Nova is going to be with us for a while then, Chief?
Absolutely, without a doubt, without a doubt. And I and none of my other partners would even embark on something like this if we didn't think it'd work. It's a lot of resources, a lot of money, a lot of time and effort.
And the money's coming from where?
The police department, we have numerous resources over there, in kind, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And the same, matter of fact, the element is actually set up on the same floor with the Jackson County Prosecutor's Office. They work mm-hmm. out of that office. That's how serious we are. They gave us a space. The captain over there, Joseph McHale, he runs the whole thing. He has two detectives working with him, and we're talking about even yesterday putting another person over there. I mean, a lot of support staff. You have the master social worker over there. So it's something that's not going to be a six-month program or project.
Can Daryl Forte guarantee this is going to make a difference?
I can guarantee that it's already made a difference. When you have that many people show up at a call-in, we've never had a call-in before like this in Kansas City. When you have that many people, when you can meet a guy on his front steps and he's saying, I'm getting my GED next week, and you give him and he has a positive attitude saying, hey, I'm trying to change. I have a little boy, and I have to change because of the path. And he tells you, I don't associate with who I used to associate with. That's telling you right there things are changing. Is this going to be the cure-all? Is it going to change overnight? No, we've had history of this, you know, in Kansas City and other big cities. But what I can tell you, as long as we're the heads that I name, we're going to give it 100%. We're going to give it 100%, and it's different. And we may have to tweak it. If you look at some of the other mm-hmm. places that had done something similar, you know, they peak out in 4 or 5 years or whatever, but they haven't had the social worker work component to like we have in Kansas City. And we'll tweak it some more. I mean, it may look a little different 6 months from now. We're going to keep getting better.
We're visiting with Kansas City, Missouri Police Chief Daryl Forte. We're wondering, how safe do you think Kansas City is these days? Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. You can also tweet us @KCUR Up to Date. Chief, in early 2012, not long after you became chief, you launched something called a hotspot initiative to target crime-ridden areas. What is a hotspot initiative, and how successful have you been with it?
A hotspot initiative is nothing more, and is not even new to Kansas City or any other place. It's where you've identified crime patterns, whether it be people, actual crime, perception of crime, and you put resources in those areas, and you just target it. And, you know, no different than if we had a rape suspect in a certain area, we put more resources over there. If you had a burglary problem, we've been doing that for years. They were doing it probably before I was born in 1962, but I just want to focus on what's different about this hotspot piece. I have internal people, officers, detectives. They have to come out every so often and ride in the field, and it's not just for hotspot purposes, but it's for additional training. If we had a major incident in Kansas City, we've had people that hadn't been in patrol for 15 or 20 years. I want to make sure they stay current on what's happening in the field, plus they can stay connected. If you have a robbery detective that comes out in the community, if he has a problem in a robbery problem in a certain area, yeah, if he rides out in the car for a while, he might be able to make some connections to help him solve that robbery. So it's not just about putting people in jail. We have to identify people, and of course we have to arrest people, but it's about developing relationships out there, and that's a huge piece of what we've been missing, I believe, over the years.
How big, geographically speaking, are these hot spots when you target an area? And give us an example of what maybe one has been over the months.
When you talk about the hot spot piece, Kansas City is over 300 square miles, and the hotspot piece is less than 13 square miles for the whole city. We've targeted those areas where we looked at before 2011, or during 2011 and 2 years before that. You looked at where your crime patterns were, specifically aggravated assaults where a firearm was used, and homicides. And you take our entire city, and over half of those homicides occurred in a 13-square-mile area. If you break them up, it's four different pockets, but if you put them all together, it would be about 13 square miles, and that's where we're focusing.
And how many officers will you sort of inject into one of those hot spots for a prolonged period of time?
It's different officers, different days, because it depends on the workload. The officers that work the field, they know where the hot spots are, and the ones that come out from internal elements, whether it be, like I said, robbery or sex crimes or wherever. They're put in these areas, and again, for visibility and developing relationships. And when you talk about having an officer that hadn't been out in 20 years, that officer or detective, when they come out, they have some knowledge that they can transfer to these other people that are new, mm-hmm. that institutional knowledge. So again, it's not just about the criminal piece. It's about making sure we stay trained in what's happening in the patrol operation in case we have a major incident.
So any one hotspot might be just as small as, 10 blocks by 10 blocks, right? It
could be
that intense of a focus. Do you have a sense if it's making a difference?
I know it's making a difference because as I go out and talk to people, they say, there was a lot of police officers in our area last night. I get calls on a Friday night and say, what's going on tonight? There's a bunch of police officers just riding up down the street. I tell them, crisscross the streets, go around and talk to people. I saw a guy at the post office not too long ago, and he said he's been a mail carrier for years. This is the first time he said a police officer stopped and talked to him. Hey, anything you want to tell me about it? Introduced himself, gave him a card, those kind of things. And that's what I'm hoping. It's contagious. You know,
I'm wondering how you can afford to devote that much person power to a hotspot chief when the history in this town when it comes to use of your own personnel has been, you know, officers just so little time to really patrol in a casual way. They simply race from call to call to call. And that's been my understanding of what you're up against in terms of sort of how you dispatch your own personnel around the city. How can you afford to inject a whole bunch of officers into one area when there's so many calls going on everywhere in town?
Because and that's why it's hotspot, and that's why you pull people from the inside, because those officers that are answering the calls. And I ask this, how can I afford not to? Because we've been doing it the other way for so many years. Why don't we try something different? Why don't we break the mold and say, okay, do something different? And I have internal staff saying, how long do we have to do this? And my answer is, we're going to do it as long as I'm here, because it's about developing relationships. We got to do some things differently. If you look, and I say this everywhere I go, if you look at the homicide rate over the years, the Kansas City homicide rate did not peak over 100 until after the race riots in 1968. You look at 1967, we had 66 homicides in Kansas City. 1968, we jumped 33 homicides to 99. 1969, we went to 116. And
we've been there pretty much ever since, haven't we?
Well, no. In 40 years, we've only been we've been under 100 homicides probably 9 times in 42, 43 years. So it's not nothing, not unusual. And that's what I'm saying. We have to break that cycle. And I think Casey Nova is just one piece that can help break that cycle. We have to try something, and we'll try something beyond this and in conjunction with this.
You know, it's no secret you're the first black chief we've had here in town. I'm wondering about the department's relationship these days with the black community, especially after the remark you made shortly after you took office, chief, when you said, we're an arrogant organization. How has that improved? Is the department still an arrogant organization?
I think in some pieces, when you look at law enforcement, you look at the type of people that are in law enforcement, we believe in what we do. We're structured. We're paramilitary. You're trained a certain way that you're good. That mm-hmm. and oftentimes you hear nobody can do it better than we can do it. I don't talk about that because there's always a better way of doing it. I think we're confident, and you have to be confident in law enforcement. We sure of ourselves, and again, it comes across as being sometimes arrogant, uncaring, and that's why I go out. I go out on a regular basis, Saturday, Sunday.
Your motorcycle sometimes.
On my motorcycle sometimes. And that's when I'm on my private time, and I just show up on things. I was out this Saturday and this Sunday. I go to almost every homicide scene regardless of what time it happened. You know, because I'm trying to change the culture and trying to show people we care. We do. We're a caring organization. I could probably name 5 incidents in the last month where an officer did something on his off-duty time to help somebody in the community. We're a caring community. And to answer your question, some days I think we are arrogant when we think we have it figured out. We'll never have it figured out because we're dealing with people, and we're people. We have our own issues. So, again, I just don't want to put us up there on a pedestal and think we're doing great. I'll never say I should get an A+. Probably as a police chief, because there's always something we can do better.
Hey, how do you emphasize that point with the rank and file officers day after day, chief, to make them aware of the fact that you don't want to be an arrogant organization any longer?
Setting the example and going to calls with people. Again, I was out there Sunday for about 3 or 4 hours, and I just pop in on calls with people and just talk to them. And most of our officers are doing the right thing. They want to do the right thing. They're not going to get rich being in law enforcement. They realize that. Most of us are here because we care. It's not about a paycheck. If we were millionaires, we might come and do it free a couple of days a week.
You know, how often do you talk to somebody out in the street and they don't realize that you're Daryl Forte and that you're the chief of police? I'm guessing that's got to happen with some frequency out there.
Well, you know, I don't want to say it's a bad thing, but I get recognized wherever. I could be at the movie theater. I could be boarding a plane coming back to Kansas City. There's always somebody, which is a good thing. You know, I think me being visible, me being the face of this organization, it's a positive thing. I care, and I think when people talk to me, they know I have that energy. I don't sleep a whole lot, but I don't need to sleep a whole lot. I'm 51, and hopefully I can keep this pace up. But I care, and I think the people that I put in place around me, they care like I care, because I can't carry this whole thing myself. And I have the right people in the right place, and we're continuing to build a great team. And again, I'd like to say publicly, too, I'm here today as the first black chief because a lot of people that took me by the hand from day one in the academy and said, Daryl, you might not want to do this. You might not want to say this. I've grown a lot in this last 18 months. I was rough around the edges. I'm still rough around the edges, but I was really rough when I first started because now I have a board where I report to five people and I'm used to chain of command. So there's been some adjustments for me, too, having four or five people telling me what to do any given day. And so it took some adjustments for me, too.
You know, how many hours a night of sleep do you get?
I used to get four. Now I'm trying to get five. You know, but
the job's taking a little bit of a toll on you here, right?
Like last night, you know, I was up at 2 o'clock and I was actually at breakfast with the mayor at 7:30. So I was up at six. So I slept from two to six.
What have you learned about your department, about your city in the 18 months or so since you became chief?
You know, I have a lot greater respect for the city because, you know, when you're out there and people walk up to you saying, hey, what can we do? I've had people that just gotten out of the penitentiary. One, Jackson County, I was over there the other day meeting with Gene Peters Baker, and I was coming out, and the guy that just did 4 years in jail came up to me and said, what can I do to help you? I did my time in jail. I messed up. Who can I talk to you for? You? Here's my number. And he has my number. He's called me numerous times. I probably shouldn't have given it to him. But He's called me numerous times saying, what can I do to help? I mean, wherever I go, people are saying, "What?" And the biggest thing I've learned, you don't really know what it's like to be a chief until you're sitting in this chair and everybody's saying, do this and do this. You all of a sudden you got, you know, 50 people that tell you you should have went left and you went right, you know, without knowing all the facts, which is okay. And I've surrounded myself with people that'll tell me when they think I'm doing something wrong. And that's what I need, you know. And I haven't done a lot wrong, I don't think.
And they do that.
Absolutely. I've made it safe to disagree with me. It's safe to disagree with me. And I've learned a lot from that. And that's been my whole career. And I think that's part of why I got support, even from the FOP, as I was going through the process, because you can disagree with me all day long because I'm not always right. I see it from Daryl Forte's perspective, a 51-year-old black male. And sometimes I need some other people to say, Daryl, you're on the wrong path. And they've been right.
The FOP being the Fraternal Order of Police,
absolutely,
the organization of officers down at headquarters at 12th and Locust.
Great group. Yeah. I used to be a member of FOP.
Yeah. What difference does it make to have an African-American chief of police in a city like Kansas City, Missouri?
I think when you talk about a segregated city like Kansas City, it makes a huge difference to some people because they never expected that in a city like Kansas City. You know, we're separated by the river, east and west of Truce and other things. So, you know, I still think we have some racism in Kansas City, and it's okay for me to say it. Some people don't like to talk about those things. It's some racism in the police department. I mean, we got to address it. We have to acknowledge it before we can address it, because when you start talking about is racism in housing, banking, education, sports, so we can't just automatically think we swore in and there's no racism. So and it's my job to manage it, my job to talk about it. One of the first things I did when I became chief, I met with all my command staff, my managers, and my civilian directors, and I gave them some training on bias awareness. And it's a module I put together that I've shared all over the state of Missouri and Kansas since 2000. I have a module that's 1 hour, and I have one from 1 hour all the way up to 8 hours, and just talked about, you know, managing our biases and where they come from, and a lot of things like that. We just talk candidly, and I'll continue to do that because, again, we have to be a good police department before we can be good partners in the community, and I recognize that. We have to work on ourselves internally before I can share that in the community.
You know, Chief, I'm guessing that most folks who begin to understand that we have a black police chief in Kansas City, Missouri, would begin to assume that the advantage of that is your ability to connect with the east side of town and communicate in a way that we haven't had that kind of communication in the past. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I believe that some of that because I was born and raised in Kansas City. I've attended a lot of churches in Kansas City. My family's attended a lot of churches. They've been involved in a lot of things in Kansas City. So just having the Forte name, I have some credibility with some people automatically. And again, the community, if you go into a couple of forums, especially the the one at Bruce R. Watkins Cultural Center, when people got up and took the mic, faith-based leaders and others, said Daryl Forte had been out here for years. He didn't just come out when he wanted to be chief. I've been knocking on doors, putting pamphlets on doors since I was a new officer.
Daryl Forte is our guest. He's the police chief of Kansas City, Missouri. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. How safe is Kansas City? Again, our number, 816-235-2888, and our email address, update@kcur.org. Paul from Overland Park, good morning.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question was about, you know, you watch enough of the local news shows, and you see so many chase scenes, you know, people resisting arrest, the police chasing in.
Right.
A lot of times, you know, eventually a crash. My question is this. What sort of procedures are in place when somebody resists arrest? I mean, you know, somebody gets into a car, backs up, cops have to jump out of the way. My thought is, you know, do a Bonnie and Clyde right then and there. Shoot him dead as quickly as possible.
All right, Paul, what do you think about that, Chief?
You know, we have a vehicle pursuit policy, and we adhere to that. We have supervisors that right away when there's a pursuit, they take charge of the pursuit. We have a certain amount of cars that can be involved in the pursuit. And if we know the identity of the driver and some other factors, we won't pursue. But if you have someone out there and their remaining at large creates a greater risk than us pursuing them, we're going to pursue them.
And why chase them these days in an era when you have helicopters and you can safely follow from the air? There have been a few chases on local TV, and local TV pounces on those things when they occur. And, you have police cars right behind the suspect vehicle going the wrong way on the street, on a one-way street. All those kinds of hazardous things develop. Why not back off, follow them from the air, and pick them up whenever it's deemed safer to do so?
And that's what we do when the helicopter's up. The helicopter's not up 24 hours a day,
okay,
and they have to come from the pad.
Okay.
But that's part of our procedures. That once the helicopter has sight of that vehicle, the helicopter takes over and we slow down.
Yeah. How safe is Kansas City? That's the question on the table today for Kansas City, Missouri Police Chief Daryl Forte, 816-235-2888. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll ask the chief about local control of police and a whole lot more. I'm Steve Kraske at the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's show about baby health, you can find it in all of our previous broadcasts at kcur.org. If your child's not the type to wear his heart on his sleeve, or she often stays quiet in a crowd, he or she might be an introvert. Tomorrow on the show, psychologist Wes Crenshaw is back. He'll bring us some teen guests to talk about being an introverted young adult. This hour, we're visiting with Kansas City, Missouri Police Chief Daryl Forte. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. You know, Chief, one issue that seems not to be going away is whether it's time for Kansas City to gain local control of its police department. With St. Louis poised to take local control this summer, Kansas City, and I'm always surprised by this, will be the only city in the country with a state-appointed police regulating body. What's your view of this?
I don't think because we're going to be the only state that's a reason to change.
Yeah.
I think the mayor's doing the right thing. Let's look into it. Let's see what the people of the city want. I'm not afraid of local control. It has its advantages and disadvantages. And one disadvantage that I can think of right off, the Missouri Attorney General's office helps us with our lawsuits, and they pay part of it.
That's right.
So that cost would probably be shifted to the city. If I was mayor, I'd want to control my police department.
Well, if you were mayor, you'd want to control it. But, you know, if you're police chief, you wonder if you'd want to or not, because suddenly you go from a 5-member board appointed by the governor to a mayor-appointed board. And, you know, those folks have direct control over your purse strings. I'm just wondering, you know, they're going to come to you. Council members might come to you and say, hey, I need a favor with a constituent who got a speeding ticket. And if you say no, that person, in theory, could just cause you all kinds of problems with your budget down the road.
That's true, but there's checks and balances when you have something like that. Absolutely. When it's called ethics.
When,
we have, and I'm sure the policies won't change so much for us. as far as how we respond to things like that. You know, I can say as a chief, that's not appropriate. You know, that's not appropriate. Tell your friend or whomever.
Well, of course, it wasn't appropriate for the person to ask you to begin with. And still, the potential is there for that person to begin to cause you lots of grief.
That could be the current board now. I could still have that depending on what caliber,
right.
What caliber of people you have on the board, and if it's and I can't say I'm for or against because I don't know what local control will look like. I or the next chief report directly to the mayor? Would I have 12 council people as you know, I report to? Would I report solely to the city manager or a combination of all that?
Yeah.
So I can't say I want local control when I don't know what local – it hadn't been defined yet. And there's some other things that we have to look at. I know some of the officers concerned about the pension, if the city would get our pension. The city already has a lot to do with our budget. They give us our budget. They know what's in the budget and those sorts of things already. So it's not that disconnect like everybody's talking about. Mm-hmm. I just read some things in probably the last 5 years where they talk about we have duplication of services. We have, you know, if we have 1,000 vehicles, the city can't take our 1,000 vehicles and service those vehicles without increasing the staff. Mm-hmm. They'll get human resources. Just because we merge with the city doesn't mean are we going to have poor service because they said, okay, we're going to get rid of all these people. There's a lot of things we need to look at and not just jump on the local control. I think it's good that we're looking at it. I'm not afraid of it, and I don't think anybody else on the police department is afraid of it because we're going to give 100% like we've been given, regardless of who we report to directly.
I'm wondering if you had a chance to survey or if I had a chance to survey the chiefs of the 50 largest cities in the United States, what kind of reaction you would get as a result of that survey. I'm guessing, and again, could be wrong, that the police chiefs, the majority of them, maybe even the vast majority, would say no to local control. If you surveyed the 50 largest mayors, they would say, you bet, bring it on.
And you're accurate. Every quarter, I go to major city chiefs. Those are chiefs from the major cities. And we just talked about it at a PERF conference, Police Executive Research Forum, and I actually got up and spoke about, you know, us being under the governor's piece of a state board.
I bet the other chief said you're a lucky guy.
Absolutely, because in some of these cities, when the mayor goes out, the chief goes out. It's a lot of politics when you do it. Like you mentioned earlier, it's a lot of politics. If you don't do this favor for me now, I don't like you anymore. So it's a lot of politics. And with Kansas City, if you look at our board of police commissioners over the years, we haven't had any that's been in trouble with the law, why they were – sitting board members are after. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had a straight board. You know, they haven't interfered a lot on a regular basis. Sometimes, you know, I think over the years we've had people to ask for different things. Nothing unethical. But again, just from a police officer perspective, coming in as a new police officer growing, I think, how can a board member say you should do this or do that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of what my growing process as a current chief. Just learning to deal with five different personalities, and I think I'm doing well now.
I guess what the question might come down to, so whose wishes should reign supreme here? Is it the chief of police of Kansas City, Missouri, or is it the mayor of Kansas City, Missouri, each of whom might want different things out of this whole local control question?
And see, the whole piece on this, if it's operational, it should be the chief of police. If it's operational about where you put your resources, how you address crime, and if it's a governance piece, it should be the mayor or whatever governance structure is in place there. And that's sometimes where it hadn't been defined over the years, where you kind of bleed over in different mm-hmm. things and depending on the personalities of the board and or mayor and the police chief, that's how you can have some problems. But I think whatever form of governance is set up whenever, I think we'll still have a great police department and we'll do well in reducing crime in the city.
Let's go to some phone calls for Kansas City Police Chief Daryl Forte. Let's go to Jim from Lee Summit. Jim, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to ask how much interaction there is with the police department for Kansas City, Kansas, and Wyandotte County. Because, you know, you got Kansas City, Kansas, Kansas City, Missouri.
Sure. How much interaction do you have between the two police departments, Chief?
We have a lot of communication, and not just that, it goes past there. Wyandotte County, Kansas City, Kansas. Criminals don't have boundaries. We're the only ones that set up and say we don't have jurisdiction over here. We talk on a regular basis with multi-jurisdictional task forces. I meet with the chief of police in Kansas on a regular basis. I was scheduled to meet with him last week or 2 weeks ago, and something came up. We have excellent communication, even Chief Douglas in Overland Park. We go out to lunch on a regular basis, and our people, which is more important than us meeting, they talk on a regular basis. We know what's going on in Kansas, and Kansas mm-hmm. knows what's going on over here.
How does it work, Chief? Say one of your officers comes across a burglary suspect on a home right on state line, but on the Missouri side, and the suspect flees across the street, you know, into Prairie Village, for instance. Can your officers chase and try to apprehend that guy even across the state line?
Yes, we can. We can chase, but we can't bring him back without extradition.
So you can arrest him on the Kansas side. You just can't bring him back.
Yeah, we can detain him on the Kansas side.
And
Kansas can come
arrest and help you out.
And we can't bring him back across state line.
But your officers can give chase and go arrest across the state line.
Absolutely. And that's for a supervisor. And when you talk about a pursuit in the vehicle, that's for a supervisor to decide if they want to do it in the vehicle. And if they're on foot, of course, the officer's going to chase depending on what the crime's for.
Yeah. Okay. Back to some calls here. John from Kansas City, Missouri. You're on with Chief Daryl Forte. John, good morning.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I just wondered, are they going to give consideration to the residency requirement still for officers, if that's ever been brought up?
And,
right now yet.
Yeah, go ahead. And the requirement now, John, is what?
That you have to live in the city.
Got to live in the city.
Yeah. And I just wonder, some of those boundaries are so far north or east or south that living outside the city but living, you know, in a different municipality would even be closer than being in the required area or municipality.
Can you see changing that requirement, Chief?
I can't change it, but the board can petition for legislation in the General Assembly to have a change.
And so it takes a state law to change it.
Absolutely. It's a state law. It's not something that is not a mandate from city council. And they would probably have to support it, because anytime you talk about state legislatures, changing something that would impact the tax base, because you got about 2,000 members of the police department, you know, 600 civilian and another 1,400 law enforcement, you're going to lose that tax base, possibly. Everybody's not going
to
flee.
Is that a good law to have a requirement from in the state books that says you've got to be a resident of Kansas City, Missouri to be a police officer?
I don't know if I can say if it's good or not good, but I understand the city's position on this. I knew coming on that I had to live in the city of Kansas City, Missouri. I love living in Kansas City, and if they would change it, I would probably stay in Kansas City. I love Kansas City. I was born and raised here, so it's no need. And I live far east. I traveled through Raytown, Independence to get to my house. So again, but I'm in Kansas City. I love Kansas City, and I wish more people would move back to Kansas City. And that's what part of my responsibility as chief of police. Let's get crime down. Let's show people we care. Let's not have businesses move out of Kansas City. Let's bring some people back.
If you got crime down, what kind of impact would it have on this town?
It'd be a huge impact, the quality of life for a lot of people. When you look at us being on some of the lists, and let me throw this out there real quick. Sometimes we're on the list because we give our data out freely. Some organizations don't, so they're not even counted toward being on the list. They may be in worse shape than us, but if you don't see
the list, meaning
the crime stat list or the homicide list and those sorts of things. So it would be great, because if you're not on the list being in the top 10 of violent crime, guess what? When someone's thinking about relocating a business, Kansas City might be considered. So it's bigger than just what we see here in Kansas City. I'm looking at what the possibilities are in Kansas City if we can get a handle on this crime and invite people to come in, and our school district and our housing stock and those kind of things.
I'm just wondering, you know, if you could wave a magic wand, or I could wave a magic wand, or Sly James could, and you could get 100 additional police officers tomorrow, or 300, would you lower the crime rate in town if you had that much more in terms of resources?
I don't know if we can attribute to a number, because we have more police officers than we ever had before. To me, it's building those relationships in the community where people feel comfortable enough to call you because they think you're going to do something.
Because a lot of folks in town don't have that comfort level. They don't call you guys because they don't trust you to call you to begin with, right?
Absolutely. And I say if you fail to protect, and people feel like you're not protecting them, they're not going to call you to tell you whatever happened. If you fail to protect, then people tend to disconnect. And the example I told you before mm-hmm. about the riots in Kansas City, the numbers didn't go up until people felt like, you know, the police not protecting us. So we're going to protect ourselves. That's what I equated to. You look at Rodney King in 1992. In 1992, we had 152 homicides. 1993, we had 153. That national incident with Rodney King, the police officers did to Rodney King, and it was shown all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's a disconnect, because now people are saying, see, that's what they do to us.
So you're not sure that 200 additional officers would be as important as just building better relationships in the community?
That's key. Those symbiotic relationships where we recognize the importance of the community, other segments of the community, because we're part of the community, and the other segments of the community recognizing what our role is. There's two narratives out there. When you talk about police sometimes, especially the younger police, especially when I was out there, I speak for myself, it's almost like they don't understand what we go through and what we have to deal with, that they would just control their kids, this and this, this wouldn't happen. And then you have the community, other segments of the community out there saying, if the police would just do this, we have to not blame one another and understand those symbiotic relationships where we both have value and we're trying to do the same thing.
Police Chief Daryl Forte is our guest. Back to some phone calls at 816-235-2888. Let's go to James from Kansas City, Missouri. James, you're on with the chief. Good morning. You there, James? Let's go to Baylon from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. I was just calling. I had a quick question for the chief.
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to know, thank you, if having younger community activists would help with crime that can relate to the youth out here, because I noticed that there's a lot of youth that's causing a lot of issues, and having younger individuals that you can work with that would actually help and talk to the youth.
And we have that. You know, it's not a formal program, but every place I go, I tell people we have individual responsibilities. If you know some youth that you need to talk to, it doesn't have to be a program or a project. It can be on your own initiative. Just get a group of people together. Get a group of people together and work from where you sit. It's not a program or a project. It's not an age deal. It's that you could be in the middle school. If you can get a group of people together and you can talk about what you can do to help the community, and I think what we've done over the years as a police organization, we're saying hand it to us and we'll fix it. And I'm saying as a police chief, let's everybody step up. You talk about kids on the plaza. Let's hit on that real quick.
Yeah.
You know, and people talk about, you know, they don't want African-American kids on the plaza. And I think what people are saying, we don't want any kids in any part of town that's going to be unruly and be disruptive to people. So
you don't see it as a racial issue.
Yeah, it's partly a racial issue.
Mm-hmm.
It is. You know, I'm just going to call it like it is. It's partly a racial issue. But we in the community, black, white, or whatever, we can help with that. Don't drop your kids off on the plaza. Go with them to the plaza. You know, show them some different things, because this city's for everybody. And I'm not saying we should exclude anybody from any place. All I'm saying is let's be a community and let's take some of the kids by the hand. Take 5 or 10 kids down there and take them to the movies. Take them walking around and those kind of things. But it shouldn't be a babysitting ground on the plaza or any place else.
Mm-hmm. Is that situation under control now?
I don't want to say under control, because things can go bad. I think what happens when something happens on the plaza, it's magnified. We've had fights all over the city. At schools, after school, other parts, you know, of town, good so-called good parts of town, but it's just not covered by the media like the plaza is.
Mm-hmm. You touch the plaza, and you're touching what the golden rod of Kansas City, right?
Yes, yes, and yeah. I understand the concern of people. You know, you want to be able to go wherever in Kansas City and be safe, and you don't want an area that's already been civil and calm to disrupt. And, mm-hmm. and disobedience and those things. And most of our kids that go on the plaza, black, white, 15-year-olds, 19-year-olds, when they go to the plaza, they behave as the two or three that wreaks havoc that get the attention. But most people that go on the plaza, they're doing the right thing and out of there, you know, within curfew.
Okay, again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888, and our email address, update@kcur.org. Trevor from Kansas City, Missouri, good morning.
Hi, thanks for the program.
Sure.
I'm glad to hear of the new police chief. We're east of Troost, and it's now become a really integrated area. And I'm asking, is there a possibility we could get officers assigned to specific neighborhoods so we develop rapport and relationships? The reason I ask is we have absolutely no trust or faith in the police department. When we call them out, and to the police department's credit, it doesn't matter if a black officer or a white officer shows up, we all get treated just the same. And they're treating the good actors exactly or worse than the bad actors. They don't seem to know one from the other. So, I mean, we're real hesitant to call the police when we see drug activity or prostitution going on or suspicious characters, because we end up getting put under the spotlight. And so we've even done things like send emails to our neighborhood liaison at the police department. We were told point blank to quit sending emails because they don't like having these things documented and pointed out to them. So it's become a very, very hostile situation in which all the legitimate business owners want nothing to do with the police. We just don't feel, we feel like they're just one more obstacle to prey on us in the neighborhood. And we've actually considered moving several businesses because of it. And we feel like if we had neighborhood police officers who got to know people and were walking the beat, that none of these problems would be happening. And I don't know if that means return to local control or leaving it in state control, but changing the way it's done. But sending out total strangers every time on a call out and getting treated the unprofessional way that everyone's getting treated. The criminals have more respect because they know the police are doing their jobs and they're doing wrong. Whereas the good actors who are providing business and jobs, they have less respect because they know they're not doing their jobs and they're treating us badly.
I got you, Trevor. Trevor, say the line. Chief, why don't you respond to Trevor for me if you would?
Okay, I'm sorry to hear that, but do me a favor, call 234-5000. Call 234-5000, and you don't have to say your address here, but give them that information and tell them you want the division commander to contact you.
I would really appreciate that, because for 5 years, I almost didn't make this call because we're so disheartened, and a lot of the people in our community are very active politically and renovating the area. We've taken back 9 square city blocks, but we're so disheartened. We need something to happen. We're just completely disheartened. So,
and do me a favor too. My office number to my administrative assistant, call 234-5010, 234-5010, and let me know how the process goes and when they get back with you. I would do it, but I want to. This is the way for me to kind of monitor how quickly we're getting back with you, and let me know how it goes. And if I need to come out there and talk to you, I'll do that.
God bless you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Trevor,
for the call. Good luck.
Bye bye.
Michael writes us this, Chief: I have great respect and admiration for most police officers, but how should I deal with rude and arrogant police officers? Is there a formal process for complaints? I think the answer to that is there sure is.
Absolutely. You can file a complaint with the Office of Citizen Complaint. You can go to any police facility, police headquarters. You can actually go to Ad Hoc over 31st and Prospect, or you can respond to 5th and Woodland, the Century Tower building. There's a number of ways you can do that, and if you don't remember any of this, call 234-5000 and ask where you might file a complaint. And I encourage anyone out there, if you feel like you've been treated badly or rudely, file a complaint so we can check it out. I mean, that's how you build public trust. And if our number of complaints go up, and I told the board this before they hired me, I think that's a good thing when your customers are talking to you. We need more people to talk to us.
When your customers file a complaint, Chief, what information do they have that enables you to best do your own due diligence and follow up on that complaint to make sure you get to the root of it?
It'll go to Internal Affairs. It'll be reviewed by Office of Citizen Complaint, and the staff in the Office of Citizen Complaint does not work for me. They work for the Board of Police Commissioners. I mean,
do they need a badge number? Do they need the names of the officers? What do they need to help track all this?
Any information would help, but if they can just say where it happened, we can pull it up in our computer system and we can identify who might have been there. And we'll do a full investigation. Every investigation comes to me to determine the outcome or any, if possible, or if warranted, disciplinary action.
How significant, a different topic, Chief, how significant of a gang problem does this city have right now, gangs?
It's not significant at all. When you talk about some of the gang issues here, we're nothing like Chicago, California. Yeah, we have too many gang members. But you have to remember, when you define gang, that's just three people that get together to be involved, to engage in criminal activity. So when you're talking about three people engaging in criminal activity, that could be three guys that grew up on the same block, three brothers, biological brothers in a house, and we classify them as a gang. But if you really look at what we do, and one thing I did early on, we had one gang squad, and I'm not going to talk about how many detectives we have in there, but within a couple of months of me becoming chief, we established another gang squad with another supervisor just so we can monitor it and it doesn't get out of control like a Chicago or California, like Los Angeles, those kind of things.
Back to some phone calls here. Let's go to Sue from Kansas City, Missouri. Sue, good morning.
Hey, how are you guys?
Well, thanks, Sue.
Thank you. Your department is known as the one you want to be driving around in because they don't look for trouble, but they will take care of trouble. And I wondered how it ever came to be, maybe back in the 70s, that they came under scrutiny and had to be, you know, seen by the state. What circumstance?
Why does the state control the police departments, what you're asking, Sue?
what brought that to such a, you know,
why did it happen, Chief?
State that they had to do that.
Years ago, corruption, I believe, is in the 30s or 40s, probably the 30s. Where
the Pendergast era.
Absolutely. They had, mm-hmm. you know, kind of like what we talked about earlier, you had a machine driving the entire city, political machine driving the entire city. You could fire and hire who you wanted to at the time. It was very corrupt. But again, if you look back on the history of the police department, we've had some incidents where officers didn't do what they're supposed to do, but, you know, we terminate them right away. We terminate them right away. So I think the system that we have is working. I'm not saying it's the best system, and I'm open to what the mayor's trying to do. At least we can look at it, and that's how you progress, I think, in any organization, constantly look at things.
Let's go to Rick from Kansas City, Missouri. Rick, good morning.
Yeah, thanks. Quickly, I'd like to differentiate from a couple of the comments that the chief had. One is that I think in a lot of cases people don't necessarily mistrust the police. They just don't think it will do any good to call in, you know, a crime or something, like something being stolen. And so I think that relates then to more police officers on the street. And I think that is a preventative measure. The more police that are seen in an area, and I mean seen, not just riding around in a car, mm-hmm. and I realize that we're talking about a lot of manpower, but when you see police officers out walking around, even if they can't be there day in and day out, maybe they go into a neighborhood and do it for a week, and then they go to a different neighborhood. When people see police officers, it's a preventative measure. I think it's a preventive measure for crime. It's less likely for crime to happen, and people that aren't committing crimes feel more secure and feel more a relationship to the police that they can then communicate with them, and that it will make a difference if they report something. But all in right. general, I think people feel disconnected because the police seem remote and only in a reactive measure, which I realize you have manpower issues and you have to answer the phone when it rings. Yeah. But
just a short response, Chief.
I agree with you. And it's not just being out there. It's making the connection while we're out there. We can drive around all day and people see us, but it's about making those relationships one-on-one that'll make us better.
Chief, it's always good to have you here. Thanks for taking the time to come visit with us.
Thank you.
That's Kansas City, Missouri Police Chief Daryl Forte. If you need time to recharge after spending the evening at a raucous high school football game, you might be an introvert. Tomorrow on the program, psychologist Wes Crenshaw is back with some teen guests to talk about an introverted young adult. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, and Beth Lipoff. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.